everybody. Welcome to Navel Gazing, the Valley Indie Podcast. This podcast, by the way, is sponsored by you. The Great Give is coming up May 5th and May 6th. I use the Great Give every year as the Valley Indie's annual reader drive. You can donate in advance, if you're so inclined, by going right now to donate.valleyindie.org. I'm thinking this year I'll do virtual interviews of other nonprofits during the Great Give using Zoom and getting that to Facebook. I have no idea how to do that, and I've had no time to plan it, but stay tuned. More importantly, I'm really looking forward to this conversation because my guest today on the podcast is Jonathan Gable. He is the supervisor of the Public Defender's Office at Superior Court in Derby on Elizabeth Street. Mr. Gable, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. How are you?
I'm good, Eugene. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. I'm here and really excited to talk to you today.
So we are, of course, in the midst of a global pandemic, the COVID-19 virus. Lots of things are shut down all over the country, the state, in the valley, in an effort to slow the transmission of this virus. So we're going to talk for a few minutes today about how the COVID shutdown has affected courts and perhaps specifically the challenges it presents to a public defender such as Mr. Gable. So first of all, Jonathan, what's happening in Derby Court these days? You're not even there from what I understand.
Right. Derby Court got shut down on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. And then essentially they shifted all the business to Milford, and it was just arraignments only. And then Milford got shut down a short time afterwards. And so everything from the valley, arrests and, you know, where to file your court case and everything like that, got shifted to the Bridgeport courthouse, the judicial district there, courthouse in Bridgeport. So there's really nothing going on in the Derby courthouse, which is really, you know, a real great loss to that community there in Derby. You know, all those businesses that depended on the courthouse, you know, for the employees going to lunch. And, you know, basically, I don't think people realize what sort of a meeting place that was for people to connect to as well. It was really, you know, it is a you know, a real source of, you know, information for the community, and, you know, it's a real resource, and it's a shame that, you know, things are shut down like they are.
And then in terms of going to Bridgeport Court, I mean, there's so much I want to ask you. I don't even know where to begin. But if I have a minor criminal case, let's say I got a DWI and it's been pending. So now, I mean, there's all these orders to say, don't travel and stay home, stay safe. How does somebody with a charge pending, what are they doing? Are they traveling to Bridgeport? What's happening there?
Well, they're not hearing cases anymore. The only, you know, matters that they're really hearing. So if you have a pending case, it's really not getting heard. The only criminal matters that they're really hearing right now are arraignments for people that are arrested overnight, and, you know, the police, you know, lock them up, put the bond on them, and they have to be arraigned in front of a judge. And, or domestic cases, those have to be heard, you know, essentially the next court day. Those are the only criminal matters that are being heard, in addition to people that are trying to get released early. The other matters, if you had a pending case, you know, in Derby, it is not going to be heard until, you know, this, for the foreseeable future. So you don't have to travel to Bridgeport. You don't have to travel to Milford or Derby or, you know, get there for that case. It's just, you know, in limbo right now.
And then what about if there's someone being held in a jail who has a case pending? Are they still able to make bond if it's allowed in the case? Because I would assume that something happening here is that the jails would want to lighten the load if they could, given how contagious this thing is. Well, what's happening to people who are being held?
Right. The DOC and the government has been very anxious to do exactly what you're saying, get these people out of jail. they don't want to be responsible for them. They want these people out. And so, yes, you can make bond. There are bond motions being heard and filed on a daily basis in Bridgeport. I know that my office, two of my attorneys this week got people out that were held on bond. You know, so those motions are being heard. And you're absolutely correct. The DOC, state of Connecticut, and the prosecutors and, you know, everyone's in agreement that we don't want to keep these people in jail and basically expose them to this in this environment. So that is something, that is a positive thing that is happening. You know, the cases are being heard, the motions are being heard to get people released.
And then, so let's say you have some type of court date from your perspective as a public defender. What is now the logistics of showing up in court? I mean, I'm not leaving my basement for the most part. I'm trying not to go to the grocery store.
I think we're all in that position right now, aren't we? I mean, we've got the kids at home, you know, under quarantine. We're trying to homeschool. We're trying to do as much work as we can from home. And then, you know, to expect someone to go to court, you know, and appear for their pending court case, you know, is kind of, you know, not going to happen right now. So you gotta understand that that's just an unexpected, you know, an unrealistic expectation for these people to show up there. And regardless of how you feel about them or, you know, they committed the crime, they got to do the time. Well, they didn't commit a death sentence crime to send them out into the community in, you know, in this environment. So we all have to be, you know, the public and everybody has to be understanding of that at this point.
But let's say you know, you had mentioned that some of the public defenders had to attend or somehow participate in a hearing for a bond hearing to get somebody out. How do you, as an attorney, prepare for that? Are you going in with masks? What's the protocol now to go into a courthouse, and what steps are being taken to protect your life from the transmission of this disease?
Right. The understanding, like, I'm going in with a mask. If I, you know, if I'm masked to go in to Bridgeport, when I went to Milford, you know, I had a mask on. There's a lot of stuff that the judicial branch and that the security forces are trying to do remotely by having, you know, a video conference. And so you're not in close communication with a lot of people. And they don't want a lot of people showing up in court. You know, even though it's, you know, a public thing mandated by our constitution of the state and, you know, the federal constitution that, you know, court is open and accessible to the public, they're really discouraging people from showing up there. And, you know, you as a reporter know, you know, the press has a right to be there, but they don't want anyone in there. They're trying to really discourage that. They're trying to protect us, you know, by providing some of that equipment, but, you know, we're not medical first responders. I think that, you know, most people would agree that, you know, the doctors and nurses should get it over, you know, an attorney going into court for, you know, 5 minutes or so.
And then I was telling you before I started recording, I happened to log on to the MarshallProject.org. Which is a nonprofit journalism site about criminal justice. And I believe it was the lead story. It might have just been published today, April 17th. The headline is, "How Do I Defend People Now?" And it says that public defenders rely on in-person confidential meetings with their clients. They say COVID-19 makes their jobs nearly impossible. So what challenges do you face as a public defender? One of the pillars, foundations of our democracy is the right to have representation in court. What particular challenges is it presenting to you and or the people you are representing?
And, thank you for that question, because that's really the heart of what we do. When someone comes in, and I don't think people realize it, they're, you know, when I see them, it's probably one of their worst moments of their life. Okay, and to be able to sit with them and sort of empathize with them, walk them through this process. And a lot of times they're emotional. They need the support. You know, you're seeing someone who, you know, at their worst moment, you know, they never thought that they would be here a lot of times, you know, and in trying to connect with them on an emotional level and provide them the support that they need, because they can't get that from, you know, a phone call or a Zoom or a Skype, you know, when you're at home running around and, you know, and a lot of people don't have this technology anyway. Mm. I mean, it's something that, you know, sort of when you reach a certain classification in, you know, society, you take for granted that you have an iPhone with Zoom, but a lot of these people don't. And so it does make it very hard to do. It's a challenge to try and connect with someone on an emotional level and provide them the support that they need. And you're right, the confidentiality of the phone call and talking to people confidentially and getting them to open up to you and tell you their entire story is a big part of, you know, sort of what a public defender does and what defense counsel has to do, because there's certain information that people just don't want to divulge about themselves. They're private, and, you know, those little details help, you know, share their entire story and could really turn a case around, you know, once you delve into those details. But they're not going to tell you, you know, by not meeting with them in person. So it makes it very difficult. It does.
And okay, and you had said earlier, one thing I just wanted to bring up quickly, we had talked about the Department of Corrections and the feeling among everybody to get people out of jail if possible, especially if your case is pending, because it is worth noting that if you have a case pending, you haven't been convicted of a crime. I'm sort of trying to anticipate some reaction on social media when people hear that, because people are like, lock away the key, you know, that sort of thing happens. But I just wanted to point out that if your case is pending, you haven't been convicted. So that's not what people are talking about necessarily. But okay, so how many arraignments have you done since, say, St. Patrick's Day, where the stuff sort of hit the fan in Connecticut?
I really don't have a good number for you about the list. I know that when we were, you know, having the arraignments done in Milford in combined courts, you know, there was about two locked up arraignments a day. So I would imagine right now Bridgeport is, you know, fielding a lot more than that, but I can't, you know, speak to that right now. I wish I had some better information for you. You know, maybe I could shoot you back with that. But right now, I think it's significantly less than before this. I think that I don't want to speak for the Valley Police Department, but I don't think they want to be arresting people either. I think they want to just, you know, have people move along, realize that they were being stupid, and just go on their way, you know, for lack of you know, if that's too blunt, I apologize.
There is. I actually, you know, just, I mean, right before I called you, I did put out an email to Chief Gerald Norowski of Derby, just sort of asking in general, yeah, what are the stats like? Is crime down, essentially? And calls right. for service are definitely, they're down 51%. And this is comparing April 2019. Oh, this is 2 weeks. This is only a 2 week snapshot. I'm looking at this, so I'm reading it for the first time.
Okay.
It's April 1st to the 15th, 2019, compared to April 1st to the 15th, 2020. So, in general, calls for service were down. He said that crime seems to be down, but it could change in a heartbeat. The previous 2 weeks, he pointed out domestic violence stats were through the roof. But he also said, like, he basically sort of echoed you by saying, you know, there's context to these numbers in terms of changes in policies and procedures because of COVID-19, court limitations, alternative actions, tickets versus arrest. So it seems like everyone is trying what they can to limit the amount of people getting into the system at this point.
Right. And Yeah. And I think that that's going to be a positive moving forward when we ever come out of this situation, is the fact that, okay, we had this happen and we told, people to be on their best behavior, and they sort of were. So do we want to be locking people up for going over to the Target and, stealing $100 worth of stuff? Do we want to be locking people up for, walking out of the bar and mouthing off? Are those kinds of things that we really want to prosecute to the nth degree and have those people locked up in jail? Or do we want to find some sort of alternative to this, given the fact that, maybe we over police things just a little bit. We're over punishing things just a little bit. I'm not trying to, sound like, a liberal talking point, but maybe, just maybe, we've gone overboard on the criminalization of every little act.
Is that what you sense? You've been a public defender for what, about 20 years or so? I thought I read somewhere.
It is 16.
16.
16 years in Derby. Yeah.
And
16 years in Derby. And
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I interrupted you. 16 years in Derby.
No, about a year, 16 years in Derby and a year before that in private practice.
And do you get the sense that we are, as a society, sort of over-policing on certain things? Is that your sense?
Well, I think that Connecticut's gone a lot, is a lot more progressive than other places. But I think that we have gone overboard with the sort of penalties that are imposed for certain things. Not everything needs to be a felony. And, if you ask most people, they'll say, yeah, that's a felony, but do they really know what a felony means? A felony is, a sentence that carries more than a year in jail. And a felony, will prohibit you from voting, and a felony will prohibit you from living in a certain area, and then your rights to carry a firearm are taken away, and lots of those things. So just to punish things just for the sake of increasing punishment has been the norm for basically the past, since the 80s, probably. Let's just increase the punishment because we want to show that we're tough on it. But, now, one of the positives that might come out of this is that we're given an opportunity to reevaluate what we consider a really, grievous offense, and how the punishment and things are going to work.
And then I had also sort of said, as a reporter, and this is really in the weeds and doesn't really, I guess, amount to a hill of beans, but as a reporter, I've always found it, going to court is sort of a favorite function of mine for whatever reason. I mean, there's always just stories and human nature.
It's very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Every just sitting in court is an experience. But it's also
from a
reporter's side, though, it's gotten, as like the press corps has shrunk. I mean, I used to send, when Ethan Frye was a reporter here, Ethan would go to court as much as he could, but there's so many, it's just you show up and there's a continuance, It's very hard to track cases. And then on the other side, I think, like, okay, if I wrote somebody got arrested for something and I put in the police press release, I feel like I owe it that person to follow it through the system. And that's become increasingly hard just by the nature of, declining resources on my end and just the way the court sort of exists. But anyway, I don't even know where I was going with that comment. But my question is actually, in terms of the media now, how is a reporter, how is someone supposed to keep an eye on what's happening in our court system when the public is being actively told and perhaps, and smartly, not to show up in court?
That's a really good question. And, you as a reporter probably know that there's these judicial alerts that you can sign up for. Mm. It's called, for your listeners, it's called the CT Savin system, S-A-V-I-N. Mm. You can sign up for an email alert in regards to a case. So anything that comes out when a court date is scheduled, you can sign up and get a text message from that, or even a voicemail message, and it's confidential. No one will know that you received that alert. And that's on the judicial website. It's part of the, you know, the victim's office of victim resources or something like that is the name of it. So that's like one thing that you can do to follow up on the cases. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, what you said about, you know, if you put something in a paper and, you know, you owe it to the person to follow up on, I think that that's one of the most admirable things I've heard in a long time.
I really
do appreciate that because...
I mean, I say it, but I'm not really doing it, so I'll just say that right
no,
there.
But I understand. I mean, there are people who get their cases dismissed or follow up on, and they come back to me and say, hey, this is still in the paper. What do I do about it? And I'm like, the best answer I can give you is call Google, you know, which isn't going to be very helpful to try and get them to take the information off Google. You know, and that's something, you know, that's way above my pay grade, but I appreciate your efforts for that.
Yeah. And if there's anybody's out, I get contacted quite regularly. And what I'll do if somebody calls me up and says, hey, my case was resolved. And if it's dismissed or something like that, and I can find it, I'll take their name off. And then there actually is, and I've done this but it is difficult. I can appeal to Google as a publisher to have information removed. So, it's Valley Independent.
You're kidding. That's great information.
Yeah. I mean, it worked a couple of years ago. It's been a little while since I took that step, but it did work, for one or two cases. And if anybody emails, it's Valley Independent Sentinel at Gmail. .com.
Awesome.
So just in terms of and then I'll turn it over to you if there's anything you want to add, but in terms of the cases now that the office is handling, I mean, there's always public defenders are known for the gargantuan amount of sort of case files that get piled on them. I think HBO had a wonderful documentary a few years ago that just a crew was just embedded with public defenders, I think in the South. I can't remember the name of it, but it was fascinating to watch. But it sounds like what you're saying is that this pandemic has sort of put everything on hold for a public defender. You're not necessarily overwhelmed. It's just that you're existing in this sort of no man's land, an abyss of, is that what's going on?
That's how I feel. And I think that's how my office feels, because there's not really a daily docket being printed out. There's not the steady stream of clients coming in and knowing what's going on with them. You know, we're not able to make contact with them. You know, the message in the office, you know, the voicemail messages, you know, aren't there. They call up and, you know, the message is, you know, court's been postponed, check with judicial, you know. So we are kind of in this limbo. For the people that are incarcerated, you know, held on a pending case or they've been sentenced, you know, we're trying to work through those as best we can. If we get the information, you know, they can call us and, you know, we'll try to file a motion and try and get them released. I mean, I have a cell phone, you know, that I will give out, you know, to anybody who wants it. I'll give out at the end of the broadcast if they want it now, to try and, you know, if they can make contact with me to try and help them, through this or try and get them out, you know, of the jail. But it really is kind of like, okay, we've got to find, you know, a new normal. And I think that's what the entire country's sort of struggling with right now.
And is there, I mean, I think I know the answer, but I'll ask it anyway. Has there been any new notices that maybe I'm not aware of from the judicial branch saying, well, here's what's coming next. Here's the next phase in this thing?
No. There has not, to my knowledge, there hasn't been. You know, I'll qualify that. I just haven't heard anything. I would assume that we're going to follow the governor's lead, which, you know, was until at least May 20th. Things are going to be like this. And then, you know, we'll have to see where it goes from there. I mean, I can't wait until they open up Derby Court. I love that courthouse. I love the Valley. Love the people there. So, I'm looking forward to the day that we're back, past this.
Okay, Jonathan. Now, you're the public defender. I am just a reporter who knows nothing from nothing. Is there anything you wanted to touch upon that I haven't asked you?
I really think, we're going to come out of this. It's going to be, there's a lot of opportunity here to make things better. Listening to, what the governors are having to say, Cuomo and Lamont and, the guy from New Jersey, his name escapes me now. A lot of it's been doom and gloom. But, at the end of this, we're going to figure out a way to make things better. I think the court system is going to be a lot better. I think we're going to figure out a way to, maybe people don't need to be there every day and every appearance has to be in person. And maybe, there's going to be, we don't really need to penalize these things the way that they're penalized. We don't need to have people locked up for these certain offenses. So I think there's going to be some positive movement from it. I just hope we get there sooner rather than later.
Mm. And you know what? As you were saying that, I apologize, but I have one more question, and then I promise we'll give your cell phone number and I'll let you go. In terms of the people you defend and the criminal charges brought against them, if you had to guess, how often does drugs or alcohol play a part in what's happening in the person's life? And then in terms of getting treatment for that, is that something that's improved, or are we still in this mode where you go to jail and treatment is a second priority?
It's a great question. For what I've done in the Valley in my, 16 years there, it's probably in excess of 90% that we have, drugs or alcohol involved. But an even bigger thing in the Valley and, in my practice is the mental health component, because you really don't have one without the other a lot of the times. A lot of times what happens is, it's a self-medication thing because they don't have access to proper health care or, mental health treatment. And they figured out a way to get by using the substances, and it helps them, cope with the mental trauma or mental defect that they have going on. So I think that's a big part. So when you add in, substance abuse, alcohol, and mental health, it's well in excess of over 90% of the people that come into Derby Court, they're accused of a crime, have one of those issues. I would say well in excess of over 90%.
And then go ahead.
I'm going to say in terms of the treatment, it seemed to be getting better in the last couple of years. There was, more access to it. There was a lot of treatment providers. There was Griffin Hospital. There was AIC. There was the Morris, MCCA, used to have the Morris Foundation, those places, it seemed to be getting better, in terms of access to the treatment, because, if someone had insurance or Husky or something like that, they could access that mental health component of the treatment and, sort of find a pathway, around at least their legal troubles and maybe a pathway to a better life, by doing the treatment. I think that that's going to be a real challenge for the state and probably the country, because the funding's probably going to be cut after all this is done. And we're just going to neglect, the issues again, like we've done. So, in the past.
And just to put a period on that, that's one of the reasons that we have the Great Give coming up May 5th and May 6th in the Valley. And one of the many nonprofits you can, you actually go to the Great Give and you can search by topic. A lot of the nonprofits that can benefit, you can donate money directly to them, are organizations that deal with substance abuse, family counseling, domestic violence, mental health counseling. You can directly donate. So an early plug for those organizations coming up May 5th and May 6th during the Great Give. All right, Jonathan, I want to thank you so much, truly, for taking the time to speak with me today. I really do appreciate it.
No, I thank you for reaching out to me. I really appreciate it. And, I, you know, whoever is listening in the Valley, you know, we all love you in the Public Defender's Office. We're going to get through it.
And your cell phone, you had promised to give out your cell phone in case somebody needs
Absolutely.
It. Go right ahead.
Absolutely. 203-836-4676.